You know that that old carved in stone software engineering
The
rule,
golden rule.
right? The one you hear in every tense tech meeting when some junior developer suggests, just starting fresh. The rule of never ever rewrite a legacy system from scratch.
Yeah, the one that ruins everyone's day.
Exactly. Well, it is officially dead.
Completely dead.
And it didn't just slowly fade away into obscurity either. It was killed basically overnight by this massive seismic price drop.
Right.
But welcome to the deep dive, everyone. Today, our mission is to explore this incredible shift in how massive enterprise software actually gets upgraded. Because if rewriting code is suddenly practically free, why isn't every major airline, hospital, and bank upgrading their clunky 1980s mainframes this afternoon? Okay, let's unpack this because we have sources that explain why AI and code generation made writing code basically free, but the real bottleneck is, well, it's something entirely different now.
Yeah, I mean, we are looking at a fundamental, honestly almost violent shift in the economics of software development because the cost of generating the code, the actual, typing out of lines of logic, that cost has completely collapsed.
Right.
But the cost of proving that the new code actually works, that hasn't dropped a single cent.
Not at all.
Proving the code is now the real bottleneck. It's basically holding the entire corporate world hostage.
So, to understand why everything hasn't just changed overnight, we really need to look at the receipt, right? Like the hard evidence that triggered this whole realization that the old never rewrite taboo was broken.
Right, the turning point.
Yeah. Back in July, this project called Bun did something that honestly should have been technically impossible.
The Bun project is just, it's the perfect baseline for this. It was really the moment the industry collectively stopped and just realized, like, oh, the old constraints are completely gone.
Yeah, because a single engineer ported roughly 500,000 lines of code. 500,000. And they moved it from one programming language, Zig, to another language, Rust, in just 11 days.
Which is wild.
It's insane. And for anyone listening who, doesn't write code every day, translating between two highly complex memory-safe languages like that, it's not just swapping vocabulary.
No, not at
It's
all.
not like translating a menu from Spanish to French. They have entirely different rules for how they manage the computer's memory.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like translating a novel, but in the new language, the laws of gravity work backwards.
Yeah. Under the old rules of software engineering, a 500,000 line port with memory management shifts. That is a multi-year project.
Minimum.
Exactly. It requires a dedicated team of senior developers, project managers, endless testing cycles. So doing it in 11 days implies an entirely new mechanism is at play here.
Right. It's like having this tireless, lightning-fast ghostwriter,
Yeah.
machine that never sleeps, never takes a coffee break. It just churns out perfect translations of this massive, dense encyclopedia.
Which is exactly what AI code generation tools are doing now.
But I have to push back a little on this. If an AI or even a single engineer with these new tools can rewrite 500,000 lines of complex code in 2 weeks, why isn't every big company instantly replacing all their 40-year-old systems right now?
Right.
Like, why are we still dealing with bank portals that look like they were built during the Reagan administration?
Well, it comes down to what Bun had that those massive enterprise systems absolutely do not have.
Which is.
Bun was backed by an examiner that never gets tired, never gets polite, and just never accepts a compromise.
An automated examiner.
Exactly. Thousands of automated tests and a hard compatibility target. So every single time that lightning-fast AI ghostwriter generated a new change, it was instantly graded.
Graded against a massive suite of tests.
Right. The machine could instantaneously say, yes, this behaves exactly like the old code, or no, it fails on this obscure edge case.
So it wasn't just that they could write it fast, it's that they could verify it fast. Which, if you look at a massive policy administration system at an insurance company or, a legacy banking core, they just don't have that examiner.
They don't.
They don't have thousands of neat, modern, automated tests covering every possible scenario. So you can generate all the AI code you want, but you have absolutely no way to prove it won't just zero out everyone's checking account the second you turn it on.
Which introduces the core concept we really need to explore today, which is the answer key.
Yes, the answer key.
The source material notes that this was originally called an executable oracle, which borrows from traditional computer science, where an oracle is a mechanism that basically grades a
I
test.
mean, I love the term executable oracle, but the author quickly realized that when you walk into a room of enterprise business leaders and start talking about an oracle,
Oh, they panic.
yeah, They immediately panic, thinking you're talking about licensing fees for the massive database company of the same name.
Right. Budget meetings would just derail instantly. So they renamed it to the answer key.
Makes sense.
And it is anything that lets a machine grade a cutover. It's the automated mechanism that proves the new replacement system behaves exactly perfectly like the old legacy system it's replacing.
It grades the test.
Exactly. It answers the only question that matters to a chief information officer, which is, does this new thing behave like the old thing everywhere that counts?
But wait, let's actually unpack the mechanics of that, because there is a detail in the text here that is totally counterintuitive.
Yeah.
The source makes a very strict distinction. An answer key establishes equivalence, right? Not desirability.
Yes, that's a crucial point.
It proves the new system does exactly what the old one did. But the old one might have been doing it wrong.
Frequently, the old one is doing it wrong.
Right. The text explicitly says it can perfectly replicate a defect that downstream systems now depend on. So wait, we're spending all this effort to perfectly clone a 30-year-old mistake.
Yes.
Imagine a bug in a 1990s billing system that accidentally adds a trailing space to a customer's last name. Why on earth would we intentionally train an AI to replicate that typo?
What's fascinating here is that in these massive ancient enterprise systems, correctness doesn't live in a neat little specification document.
Because they lost it.
Right. The original documents are gone, or they were obsolete literally the day the software launched. Correctness lives in the chaotic reality of the system's current behavior.
Ah, I see.
It lives in that downstream mailing system that was built 10 years later, which now actually relies on that trailing space to parse the text file correctly.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so if you fix the typo in the billing system, the mailing system crashes and suddenly nobody gets their bills.
The bug became load-bearing.
Exactly. The system itself has become its only true specification. So modernizing these systems requires solving two totally separate problems.
Okay.
First, you need an answer key to ask, is the new system exactly the same as the old one? And second, you need a business specification to ask, was the old system actually right in the first place?
But you can't do both at once.
You absolutely cannot solve both at the same time. If you try to fix 30-year-old bugs while you are simultaneously swapping out the underlying technology, you just lose your baseline. You are painting on a canvas that is actively catching fire.
So you have to clone the chaos first.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like restoring a historic building, right? You don't try to add a modern open concept kitchen while you are jacking up the foundation.
Right, that's a disaster.
You secure the foundation first, matching every weird quirk of the old floorboards just to make sure the house doesn't collapse.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's say a company has a modernization backlog of like 400 ancient systems. They know they need an answer key. How do they sort that mess?
Well, the source lays out this really clever triage system. You score every candidate system into one of three rewrite readiness tiers.
Okay.
And you have to be completely ruthless about what actually qualifies for the top tier, because project managers will always claim their system is ready just because they have 80% test coverage.
Right. But test coverage is a metric about lines of code, not a metric about business behaviors.
Exactly.
It just tells you that the code was executed during a test, but doesn't tell you if the system, you know, properly handles the leap day bug or that weird retry storm that happens once every 5 years when the servers reboot in the wrong sequence.
Right. So tier one is reserved exclusively for systems where the answer key already exists in the real world.
Like what?
We are talking about calculation engines with golden perfect data sets or systems whose outputs are already reconciled daily against an unquestionable external record, like the corporate general ledger.
The blunt membership test for tier one is honestly my favorite part of this whole framework. The source says you have to ask yourself, would you bet a cutover weekend on green?
Yes, that's the ultimate test.
Because picture the reality of a cutover. It's 3.00 on a Sunday. The entire IT department is sweating in a war room, eating stale pizza, just staring at a dashboard.
The classic war room.
Right. If the automated tests flash green, are you really willing to bet your career and flip the switch to route real money through the new AI-written system?
And if the answer is yes, those systems just became the absolute cheapest rewrite candidates in your entire portfolio.
Because the AI writes the code, the existing ledger grades it, and you just deploy.
Exactly. But unfortunately, there are far fewer tier one systems than executives like to imagine. Most enterprise systems live in tier two.
So what does this all mean for tier two? That means the answer key is constructible, right?
Yes, constructible. The system's behavior is stable, and you can observe what it does, but nobody has actually built the automated grading system yet.
Okay, so what's the move there?
Here is where the strategy completely inverts. For Tier 2, the modernization project does not start as a coding project. It starts as a verification project.
Oh, interesting.
You build the answer key before you ever let an AI even look at the legacy code. You execute what are called shadow runs.
I want to dive into the mechanics of a shadow run, actually, because it sounds easy on paper. You know, just run both systems and compare them.
Right, sounds simple.
But mechanically, how does a bank actually do that without accidentally charging a customer twice? If you run the old billing system and the new AI billing system at the same time, aren't you duplicating every action?
Right, and that's why it is an engineering marvel just to build the test harness itself. You have to duplicate the inbound traffic, say, a customer swiping a credit card.
Okay.
You let the old system process it normally and send the real receipt, but you route a copy of that swipe to the new AI-written system. But the new system is running in a sensory deprivation tank, like a sandbox.
Right, a sandbox, so it thinks it's in the real world.
Exactly. It thinks it's writing to the real database, but it's writing to a ghost database. It thinks it's firing off a confirmation email, but that outbound email is intercepted and deleted by the network layer. And then a separate reconciliation process compares the state of the real database with the ghost database. Did they deduct the exact same fee? Did they apply the exact same loyalty points? You have to build that isolated environment first.
Which brings us to the organizational nightmare, Tier 3.
Oh, Tier 3.
This is where the answer key is absent or contested.
Yeah.
Nobody can even agree on what correct means anymore.
This requires intent recovery. It is no longer a technology problem. It is entirely a human political problem.
Yeah.
Imagine a legacy system that tracks a data field called, I don't know, customer status. Marketing thinks an active status means the customer opened a promotional email this month, but the billing department thinks active means the customer paid their invoice within 30 days.
Two different departments interpreting the exact same field in totally contradictory ways.
Right.
An AI cannot solve that. An AI doesn't know who wins the argument between the chief marketing officer and the chief financial officer.
No, the system's current behavior is likely just a tangled compromise between those two departments from a turf war a decade ago.
A literal turf war in the code.
Exactly. To modernize it, you have to get human beings in a room to argue and write the specification the system never had. That work is human, it is intensely political, and it is excruciatingly slow.
So what does this all mean? When you look at these three tiers, this massive irony emerges.
Yeah.
The glamorous system, the one with the huge executive sponsor, the one that gets talked about on glossy conference slides, that one might be hopelessly stuck in Tier 3 because of internal corporate bickering over what revenue actually means.
Usually is.
Right. Meanwhile, a completely boring, unglamorous nightly batch process that nobody's even thought about since 2012 might be a Tier 1 goldmine,
Yes.
simply because it reconciles perfectly to the ledger every single night. It literally flips the corporate priority list upside down.
You don't modernize the most high-profile system first. You modernize the system that can actually generate an answer key.
Right. To make this incredibly concrete for you listening, we can scale this logic all the way down to a single developer's laptop.
Oh, the McHeadroom example.
Yes. The source material author applied this to a micro project, building a Mac menu bar app called McHeadroom.
It's a brilliant illustration of the principle at scale zero. The app basically just tracks CPU and memory usage, consolidating like 50 different background browser helpers into a single row on the screen.
But every number that app displays is a claim about what the computer is actually doing. If a monitoring app shows you the wrong numbers, it is actively misleading you.
Right.
So how did the author prove the numbers were right before spending hours making the user interface look pretty? They used an answer key that already existed.
Because macOS has its own activity monitor built right in.
Exactly. The author built the reconciliation gate first. They made their app sample the system, consolidate the data, and then every 5 seconds, it automatically compared its math against the Mac's official activity monitor.
And they permitted a tiny 2% drift because, you know, sampling times vary slightly, but fundamentally, if the numbers diverged, the app instantly knew it was wrong.
It's so smart.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, by doing that, the author revealed why the entire legacy cost model of corporate IT is broken.
Also.
Well, in the old paradigm, budgeting for a rewrite was all about funding lines of code. It was about paying for developer years to do construction. But now, generation is cheap. The AI does the typing. The dominant cost has completely moved to what the text calls evaluation capacity.
Right. Evaluation capacity needs to be a separately funded constraint. It is no longer about paying to build the thing. It is about paying to prove the thing.
Yes.
It's like paying to build a custom house. Under the old rules, you pay a massive crew of builders for the bricks, the wood, the labor.
Very expensive.
But with AI, it's like getting the house built for almost free by a magical 3D printer. The house just appears.
But the local government says you cannot move into the house unless you pay for a master home inspector to live on the property forever. Drawing their own salary, grading every single room, and approving any future renovations you ever want to do. You aren't paying for the house anymore. You are paying for the lifetime inspector.
And that lifetime inspector is incredibly valuable. Because once you build it, it gates every future change. Every time the AI models get upgraded and can write better code, or, you know, every time a new regulation passes, you just run the answer key.
So how does a company actually operationalize this? Monday morning in the boardroom, the skeptics are waiting.
Right.
The source outlines a ruthless action plan called Platform Pilot Zero. It is designed to fit inside a single quarter. You don't try to boil the ocean. You pick just three candidate systems from your backlog.
Just three. And you score their potential answer keys against four very hard questions.
Yeah.
I bet the very first hurdle is just figuring out if a failing test even exists.
Yes. Does a failing test actually exist for every behavior that matters? If it doesn't, you are flying blind.
Okay, what's next?
The second question is about replayability. Can you replay a representative period of real production activity against both the old and new systems?
Wait, why is replaying production so difficult mechanically? Can't a company just copy yesterday's database and run it again?
Because of statefulness and time. If your legacy system calculates interest based on today's calendar date and you replay a transaction from last Tuesday, the new system will calculate entirely different interest.
Oh, of course.
To replay production, you have to engineer a way to mock the system clock. You have to intercept external API calls like a ping to a credit bureau that might return a different credit score today than it did last week. It is a massive technical hurdle.
Wow, yeah. Okay, so the third question targets that tier three trap we discussed earlier. When the old and new systems inevitably disagree during that shadow run, who is the human being that arbitrates the disagreement, and against what golden record?
Right.
If nobody in the company has the authority to arbitrate, the project is dead in the water.
It's done. And the fourth question brings in the ultimate final boss of enterprise IT.
Regulators.
Yep.
The compliance department is going to have a field day with AI-generated code. You can't just walk into an auditor's office and say, don't worry, you know, the AI promised it works and our internal tests are green.
Because regulators are entirely unforgiving about black boxes. They demand traceability. What evidence will your risk department, your auditors, and your government regulators actually accept as proof that the system works?
What?
Green tests rarely satisfy independent validation requirements on their own in heavily regulated spaces like healthcare or finance. The answer key gives you a mechanism to make that validation mathematical rather than anecdotal.
So once you answer those four questions, the source advises picking the strongest tier two candidate and funding its answer key first.
Yeah.
You only scale up based on auditable evidence.
Exactly.
But here's where it gets really interesting. This brings up what the author calls the honest objection.
I love this part.
Right, because anyone who has survived a corporate system migration knows the code is just the tip of the iceberg.
Mm.
The real nightmares are data migration, untangling a spaghetti web of integration points, and frankly, organizational change management when thousands of employees just refuse to learn the new interface.
And AI code generation solves absolutely none of those problems.
Not a single one.
It doesn't magically untangle a spaghetti integration or train a stubborn workforce, but it completely changes the paradigm anyway. It shrinks the cost of the raw coding so drastically that systems that used to be economically impossible to touch suddenly clear the threshold of viability.
It turns a subjective emotional project into a measurable convergence problem. It gives operators concrete, undeniable evidence to accept the new system. It leaves the hard parts hard, but it makes them measurable.
Right.
The text specifically warns against ignoring this and just trusting the AI, though. There is a phrase used for vendors pushing these agentic rewrites powered by AI that skip the rigorous answer key step.
Yeah.
They are selling you an incident.
Selling an incident? I mean, an AI-generated incident in a massive financial system isn't just a software bug. It is a front-page headline. It is a stock price collapsing event.
Exactly.
The answer key is really the only barrier standing between cheap code generation and catastrophic institutional risk.
So we have covered immense ground today. Writing code is now shockingly cheap. But proving that code works is the massive new bottleneck. The answer key, this automated, relentless grading system, is the new capital asset. It is the lifetime inspector that decides what actually gets modernized and what gets left to rot.
It really is. And you know, the source material leaves us with a powerful observation. Answer keys keep.
What does that mean?
It means even if a company spends a quarter building an answer key for a legacy system, and then the massive AI rewrite project gets canceled entirely, they haven't wasted their money.
Right.
They now have a clear specification, incredible observability, and a reusable automated record of how their own business actually behaves.
Yeah, and that leads to such an interesting thought to walk away with. Even if an enterprise never actually finishes rewriting a system, building the answer key forces a company to finally document and agree upon what their business actually does.
Yes, exactly.
The true value of this whole AI-driven modernization push might not be better code at all. It might just be forcing humans to finally agree with each other on the rules of their own businesses.
That's the real modernization.
Think about that the next time you hear two departments arguing over an old spreadsheet. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the real costs of the technology around you because, as we learned today, it is never just about the code. It is about proving what the code does.